It was a difficult day. The pain, the separation that Liz just sort of spoke about in her prayer was weighing heavily. Weighing heavily, carrying like a heavy coat on a person, taking the light away from an otherwise vibrant day. Sense of loss, sense of separation. And in the midst of that loss, this child did what is the natural impulse for every child in this world. He's in the midst of that sense of separation and loss and pain as he scout the arms of her mother and father. This child that I speak of is 31 years old. This child that I speak of was seeking out the arms not of her biological mother and father, but of the people that came into her life when she was 17 years old. This child that I speak of is our Hanai daughter, our foster daughter, Michelle, who some of you met a couple of weeks ago. And it was just about 10 days or so ago that Kirsten and I were at Ala Moana Beach Park with Michelle. And there we had just finished putting the ashes of her father into the ocean, just beyond the reef. And Kirsten and I stood together as we watched Michelle standing there on top of the reef with the flowers that we had scattered into the water surrounding her. Michelle's relationship with her father, who had died 4 years ago, was a complicated relationship. And when he died, those complications had not been fully resolved. And Michelle, who had come to live with us when she was 17 years old, partly because of the complications of that relationship with both her father and her mother, had not been able to work out any sense of resolve when Dad died. And it had rocked her world in ways deeper than we could ever had imagined. When her father had passed away and Kirsten had been there with her at that time, and her father had been cremated, Michelle shipped his ashes to us and said, "There will be a time when I can come back home. Can you hold on to Dad? Can you hold on to Dad until that moment? And we'll do this together." And then, of course, we said we would. And so the many times that you all know that we have moved in the last 4 years, John, her father, John went with us from one place to the next. When Michelle came back to Hawaii for the first time after that, just about 2 weeks ago, we could see that she could see the light within her that we had always known, but she had been blind to. Overwhelmed was she by so many of life's issues and life's pains, many of which extended from the relationship with her birth parents. But now she felt that light, and now she was ready. And so together we went out with boogie board and surfboard and went just beyond the reef and put her father to a place of rest. And then Kirsten and I waited, and Michelle swam back to us. And she did what a child will do. She got herself into the tiniest little ball, and she wrapped herself into our arms, and we held her. And we held her. And we held her. And as we held her, that cloak of heaviness that had descended upon her, of the pain and the loss of separation, began to dissipate. And she began to know that she was indeed very loved. "Out of the depths I cry," says the psalmist in verse 130. "Out of the depths I cry," and I wonder if the psalmist speaking those words maybe 3,000 years ago is hearing again those very same cries, because here is our 31-year-old Hanai daughter who is coming to wrap herself up in our arms because she can and she needs it, because we understand what the psalmist also said is, "Like a child weaned from their parents, I come to you." For even though we may be weaned, we still know that within the mother and father that we long for, we are able to find that strength and find that support and find that comfort. We understand why it is when Jesus says, when you pray, make sure that you begin your prayer with Abba, Daddy, Ama, Mommy. understand mother and father, mommy and daddy, mom and dad. That is the God that you worship, the God who calls you into your being and welcomes you into the arms of love. And so Michelle, our Hanai daughter, experiences this, but out of the depths I cry, those very same cries that Liz lifted up just a little bit ago are being heard on the borders of our nation. And those children, some of whom classified as of tender age, some of whom not yet weaned, some of whom at 3 and 4 are being asked to then go to court and represent themselves, they are being forcibly separated from their families. They are being used as pawns in a political game, their families coming to a border seeking asylum, seeking a place of rest, a place that will help them to escape the violence of their homes. Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala are listed as three of the five most violent countries in the world. And they have come to our nation's border looking for a place, and they are instead finding their families ripped apart and separated. And even when policies have been changed, and changed in such a way that we say we will no longer separate those families, we are beginning to then put those families into locations, 100 detention centers spread out over 17 different states, many of them run by for-profit prisons, which make their money by the more people who are detained. And we are beginning to put them into places that look eerily similar to the internment camps of World War II. Another translation of the first verse of Psalm 30. Hang on just a minute. I have the wrong notes here. Life gives you that, doesn't it? Another translation is not just out of the depths I cry, but also is from a sea of troubles I cry. And let's be clear. What is happening on our borders is not the only place where we are experiencing a sea of troubles. In Syria, over the last 7 years, 5 million, almost half of the population, has been forced to flee a country that is being ravaged by a proxy war, where their own leader is using horrific weapons from the past, and the superpowers that are in opposition with one another and using this as a place to play off of each other are testing out new weapons. And those superpowers have the ability to make sure they do not bomb each other's bases, but cannot have the ability to come to a table and work for peace. 5 million refugees over the last 7 years, and the nation that has a statute that says, bring me your poor, your huddled masses, you're weary, you're tired, in the last 6 months has taken in a grand total of 44 people from this war-ravaged nation and has just upheld a policy that says no more shall come in. And if we think that sea of refugees of 5 million from Syria is a lot, just hold on for the climate refugees that are coming into our world as we speak. There's a climate that goes out of control, and we are watching nations literally going undersea. The sea of troubles is not a sea of metaphor. That is a sea of reality. As nations go underwater and low-lying communities go underwater, all because a climate is raging out of control and it is not of their making. The very same time that they are losing their homes and being forced to flee, the oil and gas companies and the banks that finance them and those that make the climate warm are having record profits. A sea of troubles, it says. Or another translation says, out of the depths of despair I cry. And is it a despair that we sometimes cry out of at the utter numbness of repetition? Yet another mass shooting. This time in a newspaper office in Annapolis, Maryland. And we start to think, instead of never again, we go yet again. Or another serial abuser of women that comes forward at this moment, and we learn of yet another case, and we begin to say, no longer is it me too, but it is, oh, you too. Another unarmed black boy shot and killed. And we really question, do their lives matter? These are the very issues that Liz just raised up. And if you're not thoroughly depressed, I apologize, I can go further. No, I don't want to, because here's the reality. Like what Liz said, I have spent much of this last week vacillating between anger and feeling a sense of utter helplessness. A sense of absolute and utter helplessness. And here's the reality, though. Out of the depths I cry, the psalmist says in Psalm 130, verse 1, but then says, O God, out of the depths I cry, O God, my soul waits for you, O God, like a watchman expectant at the morning, knowing that the sun will rise and a new day will dawn. My hope, our hope is in you, O God. The psalmist does not just say, out of the depths I cry. The psalmist enwraps God into that very prayer, and by doing so, acknowledges that we are not alone. We do not do this alone. It is not upon the shoulders of any single person in this congregation or any other congregation to solve all of the ills of this world that make people to cry out in despair. We do not do this alone. We do this together with one another. But if we think it is strictly our responsibility, we are going to allow ourselves to verge into that place where all we are is in opposition. And when we are only in opposition, then when we who are in opposition are now in control, we just then do the same to those that we worry about right now. We are not alone. We are not in this by ourselves. We are in this with one another. We are in this with God. Martin Luther King, 4 days before he was assassinated in 1968, in a sermon that he preached at the National Cathedral, said exactly that. He said, "We are tied together in a singular garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. And whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the way God's universe is made. This is the way it is structured. There is a fabric," he says, "of mutuality, a fabric of connectivity. And let us remember that that fabric stretches back generations and generations." As friends of mine reminded me this week, the ancestors who were enslaved, the ancestors who were literally also separated from their families and then sold, persevered and endured. And we, though we may not be perfect, are way better for what they have done and for what they went through. For that fabric of mutuality extends backwards and extends forwards, because some of you, all of us, will be the shoulders of giants that generations will stand upon in the future, building upon the advances and the things that we have done and the ways that we have confronted the powers of evil, the ways in which we have lived into what does it mean to be a loving community. And that fabric of mutuality does not just extend backwards and forwards, it extends all around us. And as Mary said to us yesterday, said to us in the prayer, not only in our state capitol were there folks marching, that families belong together. There were over 700 marches across the United States. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. When ever in our lifetime have we seen hundreds of thousands of people standing up for the rights of immigrant people? Those who we are so often allow to be the other, and instead there is this mass amount of folks that are saying, no, we must stand, families must remain together. As Mary Luthi, a UCC pastor, wrote this week in one of the UCC devotions, she says, "The truth about human beings is that we are broken. The larger truth is that we heal. That even larger truth is that we heal each other. We have the power, often by the simplest of acts, to help each other heal. Indeed, how do we go on? We go on because we know that God is alongside us, is in the midst of this with us, and with God and with that power of love and God's presence within us, we have the ability to heal, not just as individuals, but as a community, because we can heal one another. And if you're tired and exhausted, which many of us are at times, if you're tired and exhausted, there is an example that Linda sent to me this week. A wonderful metaphor that I know that Angie knows so well, which is when you are a choir singing together and trying to hit the same note, and you extend that note for a very long time, some of us don't have the breath to hold the note for the whole time. And because we don't have the strength to hold the breath for the whole time, but because there are others that are singing that note, we can pause and take a breath. It is okay to be tired. It is okay to be exhausted. Take a breath and then begin to hit that note again, because when you do that, there may be somebody else that needs to take a break and take a breath. That fabric of mutuality that connects us together is all around us. It is all around us, and we have the ability to work together to see change. It may not happen overnight. I know that if we were in Brownsville, Texas, I know the people of this congregation, I know where you would be. I know you would be down on the border. I know you would be there doing all that you could to work with those babies and those children and those families, to do everything that you can. I know that's where you would be. But we are not there. We are 3,000 miles away. We are here in Hawaii. And believe me, there are issues here in this wonderful place. There are things that we need to do and work on. This is a place that has a proud tradition of welcome. As I was speaking with the young people from the Rocky Mountain Conference just before worship began, and I was talking about the things that you experienced here in Hawaii, one of the things that kept coming up over and over was a sense of welcome that they found in this place that they're not necessarily used to in other places. That is our tradition. That is who we are. And it must be honored and it must be protected, so that what is happening in other places may not ever be able to happen here, because we know that we are called to care for, to love, to reach our arms out, to encompass, just as a parent does for a child, even those that are weaned. You can write letters. You can make phone calls. You can go to marches. You can stand beside those who need someone to stand beside. There are so many things that we can do, for we are not alone. And let us make sure we say, and you can pray, and you can pray, and you can pray, because it is that which connects us to the great fabric of mutuality that exists throughout the universe. We can pray. For we are not alone. God is present in the midst of this struggle and calls us to be with God. I think about those disciples 2,000 years ago, while the crowd is pressing in upon Jesus with so many needs, so many hurts. I think that they must feel just about as overwhelmed as some of us have felt. There's too much here. There's too much pain. How do we triage this? How do we know where to go? And then all of a sudden, there is a woman who knows so deeply that if I can just touch the hem of Jesus' cloak, I can be made well. And she does that, and she is made well, and amazingly, but really shouldn't be amazingly, Jesus understands that his presence, the presence of God that has come into him, has just departed to one who is vulnerable in need, and he simply says, "Who touched my cloak?" And some might think he's wondering, because he wants to say, "What do you think you're doing?" But instead, he wants to see the face of the one who was most vulnerable, because here is the truth that we know from the testimony of the Bible throughout, is that God always sides with those who are most vulnerable, those who need health, those need wholeness, those who need life. And in it, and in that crowd, tuned into the presence of God, Jesus knew within himself who was in the greatest need. And there she was. And the disciples said, how can you tell? And I'm sure he wanted to say, how can you not tell? Because where there are those who are vulnerable, we will be led. If we are going to allow ourselves to be open to the presence and the Spirit of God, God will lead us. We may find ourselves on a border of a different making, where there is vulnerability and need, and there we will be. Because we will have, like Jesus, have opened ourselves up, have opened ourselves up in such a way that when God speaks to us, we know it. When God is present with us, we are aware of it. And when the vulnerability of the world presents to us, we know we are called to act. And for each of us, it may be different in one way or another, in a different place, in a different time. But God does not abandon the vulnerable, the lost, the least. God instead calls us to be open that we might be present, the presence of God in their lives. We recall that on that last night, together, Jesus gathered those disciples together at a table, set probably something simple like this. And on that last night, looked into the faces of his disciples and knew that in many ways they may be the most vulnerable ones around at that moment. And knew that he needed to minister to them. And knew that that which he was about to do was that which they would be called to do as well. To seek out where the pain is, to be aware of the pain, and to offer yourselves into the world, to give of yourselves, that all who seek life may find it. And so on that last night, he took a loaf of bread, gathered with the disciples, and he broke that loaf. And in the breaking of that loaf, he said, "This is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took a cup and he poured the cup and he said, "This is the blood of the new covenant. Whenever you partake of this, do this also in remembrance of me." And it's not just remembering, oh, remember when Jesus did this? The remembrance of me is to allow that presence to now come into you. And as I have been broken, so too shall you be broken in order that that there might be life. As my blood has been spilt, so too shall your blood, your spirit, be spilt so that others might experience life. And so ministering in his name, I offer to you these elements, the bread and the cup. Chris is going to help me. We have a lot of folks here. We'll allow people to come up down through the middle aisle, and we will take of this table set for us, inviting us into a world where God says, "I long to be present with you so that you may be present with others, so that my presence may be present with others." So we come to this table and share in the presence of God. Amen.